Welcome to Dispatch in Depth, where we give you the stories behind the science of emergency dispatch. This is the official research podcast of the International Academies of Emergency Dispatch, the world's leading authority in dispatch science. I'm your host, Isabel Gardette, Director of Academics for the International Academies of Emergency Dispatch. In each episode, we'll be bringing you stories of the fascinating people who do research in this area. We'll give you their backstory, including how they got there, what they're working on, and what drew them to the research. These are people who represent the cutting edge in dispatch research, and I hope you'll join us to hear more about them. Welcome to Dispatch in Depth. We're right in the middle of the so-called holiday season, time when many of us get to stay home and spend time with family and friends, unless we happen to work in a service field like emergency dispatching, in which case we might spend the holidays at work, keeping other people safe. It's critically important, but it can sometimes be a bit of a downer to have to work during this season, so we brought someone today that we hope can get you thinking in a positive light. I know I always say that we have interesting guests for you, and we do always have interesting guests, but today I'm actually talking to one of my favorite people about one of my favorite topics, so I'm even more thrilled to have you listening today than normal. So welcome, Kim Rigdon.
Thank you very much. I am thrilled to be here as well.
So Kim is currently the Associate Director for Accreditation at the International Academies, but she's had a very long history in public safety first. So can you give us a little bit of a sense of your background?
Sure. I have been in public safety for almost 27 years. I started out as a paramedic with BC Ambulance Service. I actually started on a little island in the Gulf, just off of Vancouver. And from there, I went to work as both urban and rural paramedic. And after about 10 years, I went into the dispatch center. I became a certified EMD, taking calls. And I found that what I loved about being a paramedic, making contact with people, explaining what was happening, getting them as calm as they could be, I could do 10 or 14 times on a busy night shift as a paramedic, where I could do it 100 times as an emergency dispatcher. And I really fell in love with that. I was a trainer for both paramedics and dispatchers, and then applied for a job in the quality improvement department and became a certified EDQ. And that's when everything really fell into place and things clicked. I loved that part of it. And I found that I became a better dispatcher by knowing more about quality assurance. And my career went on from there too. I ended up managing the quality assurance department for a couple big urban communication centers. And along the way, I became an EMD instructor and a Q instructor and on the board of accreditation as a reviewer. And so all of these things put me in a path that led me to my current job.
And just before you joined us at the Academy, you were working with Toronto, is that right?
Yes, Toronto Paramedic Services. I was the commander of education and quality improvement there, and they have about 140 emergency medical dispatchers.
Okay. But interestingly enough, although you have this amazing public safety background, what we want to talk about today is something a little bit more recent, which is you just recently got a degree in psychology, right? How did that happen?
I did. I just graduated from Laurier University in Waterloo, Ontario, with my undergraduate degree in psychology. It was a long path there. I can attribute really my job as both a paramedic and an emergency dispatcher with the start of it. As we all know, it is a stressful profession. And it's really good that we're more and more coming to a place where we understand how these stressors are impacting us negatively. In working, I saw how stress can negatively impact me and my coworkers and wanted to figure out what we could do about it. And so learning about psychology helped us be able to put some things in place to reduce stress. I became a critical incident stress diffuser.
Oh, wow.
And that experience of having a set way to have a discussion with a colleague about the stress they have and seeing and hearing how that stress deflated and reduced was incredibly powerful. So I've always been interested in behavior and why people do the things they do. Mm-hmm. And a few experiences that I've had in my own paramedic and call taking career just led me to want to know more about that. And I actually created a presentation that I've done at Navigator quite a few times, and I've done other places, and I've written about it, called The Psychology of a 911 Call. And in that, I talk about the critical incident stressors, the signs and symptoms, both for call takers and for the caller. One thing that we can do is get a little jaded or a little irritated with our callers because we hear the same thing over and over again, but we forget what is causing them to behave that way. And when I gave this presentation, it seemed to resonate with people. They really were able to take these ideas and remember what the caller is feeling and see the call through their eyes. And because I called it the psychology of a 911 call, I kind of thought I probably should get some backup to make sure I was teaching the right things. And I had an opportunity to return to university in 2011 on a part-time basis, and I did. So the more I learn about psychology, the more I love it. And part of that degree, I learned about positive psychology, which is my absolute favorite thing ever. And so I just worked plugging away one course or two courses at a time. So it may be the longest time anybody ever took to finish half a degree, because I did have half a degree before I became a paramedic. But yes, I did it from 2011 and I graduated this summer.
That's great. And it's amazing to hear that somebody can go to school even part-time and work full-time. That's a pretty impressive achievement in itself. So you mentioned positive psychology there, and that is what I want to really focus on today, because there seems to be this new movement towards seeing psychology in a different light. And it's not like there was negative psychology and now there's something else, but psychology has tended to have a particular approach to things, and it's, we're seeing a big change in the positive psychology movement. Can you walk us through that a little bit?
Yes. With positive psychology, it's really a younger part of psychology. It started in about 1998. And what positive psychology does, it's the study of conditions and things that contribute to flourishing. How do we become our best selves, our most optimal person? And it's the ability to look back on your life and have well-being, feel contented about your memories and satisfied with your life. In the present, it's about feeling hope and optimism for the future, feeling flow, which is getting lost in the enjoyment of what you're doing. And for the future, it's really about how can we do better? How can we excel?
And so that, to some extent, is in contrast to a more traditional psychology approach, which is looking for diagnoses. It's looking to identify a disorder or a disease. And positive psychology really doesn't do that.
No, and positive psychology is not at all to discount traditional psychology. It is an addition to it. What psychology has done in the past is has looked at, as you said, at deficits of illness or weakness, and worked on how to get people from that deficit up to baseline, up to what we would refer to as normal functioning. Yet baseline isn't flourishing. It isn't the best we can be. And so positive psychology now asks the question, how do we get from, if traditional psychology took us from minus 10 to zero, how can we get from 10 to plus 10? And instead of focusing on what's wrong with people, it focuses on what's already right with people and how to amplify strengths instead of repairing weaknesses. So it doesn't discount any of the weaknesses or illness that people may have, but it goes from there to how do we make them better?
Ah, that's interesting. Then you can start to imagine what the relevance of this might be to emergency dispatchers. So you were just talking about stress, and we have a tendency in research to focus on stress as far as psychological research for dispatchers. We just recently talked to a researcher in the field of emotional labor, which is about managing and controlling your emotions during a call. And that's sort of more in the area of managing stress, dealing with difficult callers. But this seems to go in the other direction, where you're actually talking about flourishing as a person in your work. So what specific relevance does this have for emergency dispatchers?
It has a lot of relevance in that we know that, as you were just saying, shift work is taxing. The job of an emergency dispatcher is a really difficult one. And it's a wonderful thing that we are focusing on treating the stressors of it. But positive psychology then takes that and realizes, yes, people in emergency services can have a higher incidence of stressors. But what research tells us is that there are human strengths that can act as buffers against the negative experiences and the psychological disorders. And these strengths are the key to resilience. So positive psychology can help move people from that deficit, as I was saying before, to a baseline and then improve them. But it can do much more than this. I think it's safe to say that people want to be happier, but people think that if they get a raise, if they get a promotion, if they get off this shift, if they stop working with the particular person on their shift, that will make them happier. We tend to, in our society, think that success will make us happy. But really, it's the opposite. The happier we are, the more successful we can be. And there are really simple interventions that emergency dispatchers and anyone can take to improve their base level of happiness. So if you're happier with yourself, you can bring that to work and be happier in your workplace as well. And it helps you to build resilience so that when you do have those difficult scenarios, you're better equipped to deal with them.
So give us one or two of those. What are some specific actions that dispatchers can take to work on their baseline level of flourishing or their happiness in their work?
There's actually two really simple things that you can do. The first, I would encourage people to know what their strengths are. There's a number of different ways that people can find out what their strengths are. My favorite is the VIA Strength Survey, and you can just do a questionnaire online and it will list your 24 strengths. And once you know what your strengths are, you can work on using your top strengths. There is one exercise where you choose to use a top strength in a novel way each day. An example, my top strength is love of learning. So I always want to read books and listen to podcasts. I listen to this one all the time and it's fabulous. But I could take that and look at what's one way that I don't learn. I could go to a lecture on a subject I don't know anything about. I could, instead of reading a book, I could learn something in a different way. I could learn something by doing instead of by reading. And research has shown that if you use your strengths in new ways, it lends to a sense of mastery or a sense of feeling like you're doing a better job. That's one thing. And
sorry, I'm just going to jump in really quick and say that from a personal perspective, Kim came and gave the VIA Strengths Finder to everyone in our department here at the International Academies. And we had a great time. We talked about our strengths and it really did help a lot. We've had a new vocabulary is the best way to put it. So it didn't change anybody's strengths. It didn't change necessarily our relationships with each other. But now we have a vocabulary for talking about what people are doing when they're doing things well.
Yeah, that's an excellent way to describe it. And it's my new favorite thing. And I, as a manager, I did the same thing with my team. We took the strength survey. So we all identified our strengths. There are no weaknesses. There are just strengths that we don't use as often. And that it does give us a new way to communicate or a new way to explain behavior instead of thinking a negative comment or a negative reason for why someone's doing something. It might be they've been put in a situation where they are using strengths that aren't their top ones. So it's more of a struggle for them. And anytime we can see things in a new light, just like we want to see the call through the caller's eyes when we're taking a 911 call, if we can see our colleagues through a lens of their strengths, it can really help change the way we view our workplaces and the people we work with.
And this goes back to something that you and I have talked about before, which is called attribution error. Attribution error is the idea that when I behave in a particular way, I explain it by circumstances. But when I see somebody else behave in the same way, I attribute it to their character. So
exactly.
If I ran a red light, it's because I was trying to get my kids to school. And if you ran a red light, it's because you're a jerk,
yep.
Right?
Exactly.
And so that's a pretty typical human response. And having the strengths can help create a new set of characteristics or character words that you can use to ascribe to someone. And like you said, to understand, okay, maybe this person's in a circumstance that's not their strongest.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think it lends to something else that's in the field of positive psychology, which is compassion. Compassion not only for other people, but for ourselves as well. So instead of looking at failing or not being good enough, it's, oh, how can I use a strength I don't normally use in a different way so I can get better? It's a change in your mindset from a fixed mindset to a growth mindset.
And I like that too, because I think a lot of people conceptualize compassion as feeling. I have to feel the way the other person feels. But there's actually two different kinds of empathy that are described in literature, one of which is a feeling empathy and the other which is an intellectual empathy, where I actually think about how the other person is or put myself intellectually in their perspective. And that sounds like what you're talking about. It's more of a cognitive way to get at empathy rather than having to feel all of these feelings, because that can be very difficult for a dispatcher who would have to kind of put themselves into these stressful situations all day long. In a sense, they don't want to feel everything that the caller is feeling. They
very
have
much.
To get away from that.
Yeah, and there's even further research on the people who aren't as susceptible to things like post-traumatic stress syndrome are people who are empathetic without internalizing the feeling of it.
Hmm.
I think there's about 10 podcasts we could do on all sorts of different things in this field.
So, but you had another approach that people could use to use their strengths?
This is one that I bet a lot of the people listening will have heard of. And the one that has been tested is called Three Good Things.
Mm.
You may have heard it referred to as a gratitude journal or writing down things you're grateful for. There's really strong evidence that if you write down three good things that happen to you every day for a week, and also write down the explanation of why they happened. So what was the cause of this good thing? So, and what that allows you to do is really think about it and internalize it. And what the research has shown is if you write down three good things for 1 week, it improves your happiness and decreases depressive symptoms immediately when they measured again at 3 months and still when they measured again at 6 months. So just 1 week of doing this showed increases in happiness and decreases in depression for the 6 months they measured it from.
Hmm. And when you're talking about cause, can you give an example?
I think it's just the explanation for why something happened. So yesterday before I got on a plane to come to Salt Lake City, we discovered a leak in our bathroom that went into our ceiling. And so the ceiling came down, which was not a good thing. But the good thing was it was discovered before it got any worse. And as I would write that down, the cause would be my husband came home and was really perceptive and noticed it and took action right away. So it would be, the leak in our bathroom was discovered early. I'm grateful that my husband was there to find it.
Hmm.
And it can be simple little things. It could be that your kid came in and gave you a hug, or you walked outside and the sun was warm on your face. Sometimes people get overwhelmed at the thought of doing a gratitude journal or three good things because they think they have to be really awesome, amazing things. And it's not. It could be the guy at Starbucks got your order right today.
Which made you not late for work. Right. So it sounds like this has a lot of potential relevance to leadership. And I know you've talked about that before. You've talked about strengths-based leadership, positive leadership. So for a dispatch center leader, what's the takeaway here?
In strength-based leadership, again, it's changing the focus. We are really good at emergency services in discovering what's wrong. It's almost an innate skill that we have. And so as a supervisor or a leader, it's really easy to find out what's not working both in your system and in the people that you are leading. And with strength-based leadership, it causes you to pause, to get to know what people's strengths are, to learn more about them and understand where they will thrive and where they may struggle. So instead of that fundamental attribution error you were talking about where you blame somebody for their actions, you can take a step back and look, number one, at what they're doing well first. And if they're struggling, to have a different explanation for it, one that causes you to come alongside and look at how you can be part of the solution. In strength-based leadership, it changes the focus. Instead of looking at what is going wrong, where your people aren't performing optimally, you're looking at what is going right, what your employees are doing well, how they're doing it, how they're using their strengths, if there's anything you can tweak to allow people to be in situations where they are more able to use their strengths. The main thing that strength-based leadership does, it just changes your focus. You want to catch them doing it right instead of telling them what they're doing wrong.
An exercise that you gave me was to do a feed-forward interview instead of doing feedback. It's something that we've been doing a little bit here, and it's been a very interesting experience. So instead of saying, you did this thing in the past, and here's feedback in terms of what you could have done better, what your recommendation was to ask the person, what did you do in the last, 6 months or what period of time that you felt really strong about, that you felt really good about, that you thought you were successful in, and then try to have them explain why they were successful. So what were the conditions that made them successful? So can you tell us a little bit more about that? How does that work and why is that so effective?
Yeah, it's a feed-forward interview. It was developed by a professor named Avi Kluger. And the whole is based on performance reviews and how to change. His research shows that people can't stand performance reviews. They don't like giving them. The managers don't like preparing them. And it actually can have a negative impact on performance. And the reason for that is you're focusing, like you said, on things in the past. You're giving a review of things they've already done that they can't change, and then asking them to improve in the future.
And you told me that sometimes performance reviews can have a negative effect even when the review itself was overall positive.
Yeah, in the research studies, 40% of the time, people who had positive performance reviews actually were demotivated in their work. Because what the manager may see as positive may not be what the person wants to be recognized for. Mm. And so in a feed-forward interview, instead of this list of things they did well and they didn't do well, it invites a person to tell me about a time when you felt really good about what you were doing, even before you knew the outcome. And you get the person to really describe that situation, how they felt, what they did. And it's more than just recounting. It's reliving the memory of it. And in that discussion, like if you and I were having the discussion and you were telling me about some great thing you did, I would be listening. I would smile. I would nod. That would encourage you to share more. And this feed forward technique has been shown to improve the relationship between an employee and an employer. When I did it with my staff, I had one person who shared something that I had no idea she ever experienced. She was very intuitive and really was mindful about creating a safe space and a calm environment before she gave a performance review to someone, a performance improvement plan for call taking. And I didn't know she did that, but it did change the way I thought of her. And I asked her to share what she was doing with other people. Yet had I sat down and done a performance review with her, I would never have gotten that knowledge about what she did. And it did change the way I thought of her. I was just so impressed that she did this. And so the feed forward interview lets me know amazing things about you. It lets you share things about yourself with me that I wouldn't have known. And from that experience, we can identify conditions. What was it about that experience that allowed you to do that? Mm-hmm. What internal strengths did you use? What things in your workplace allowed you to do it? Maybe it was that you had enough time to do it. It was that you had a team that supported you in this positive thing. And from there, I can invite you to use those strengths and those other processes in the future. So it gets you thinking about how you can recreate that positive result for future performance. And it really, really applies very well. In our specific field, we have a lot of feedback we give emergency dispatchers, and we can invite them to do the same thing. Instead of giving them a list of what they did wrong, we can ask them what they did right on a call or in their job that day. And when you are used to having someone talk to you about what you do well and encourage you, when you do have to have a tough conversation about something that didn't go right, people are much more open to it because you know that that's not the only thing I know about you. I also know all these amazing positive things, and this is just one little blip that we need to correct. Hmm. And I would also invite you to think about how to correct it in the future, because we know we can't change the past. And that's one of the demoralizing things about feedback and performance reviews that are not feed forward is you can tell me that I did something wrong on the job I did yesterday, but I can't change that.
Right. There's nothing I can do about that at this point.
No. So it's very unempowering. And so if we just invite them to think about how they could improve it in the future, that just takes effort and thought and it empowers them. And it's so important. We're rewriting the EDQ curriculum, and it's one of the main tenets of our new curriculum is strength-based feedback and focusing on what our emergency dispatchers are doing well instead of what they're doing wrong.
And I can say from personal experience that the one thing you said that really struck me when I did it was you hear things about people that you never expect. They're people that you work with every day, and yet what I would have predicted the activity they would choose as something that made them feel successful at work was not one time the thing that they chose as the thing that made them feel successful at work. So like you're saying, if I had written a performance review that said, you did really well on this, it might have been positive and they might have felt like, well, at least you saw that, but they wouldn't have felt rewarded for the thing that they really felt good about or wanted to be seen for. So I really like that you can see things about someone that you wouldn't otherwise have seen.
And even as you're explaining that, people can't see, but you were smiling, you were animated, right, even in recalling that information. And that's one of the things about positive psychology is savoring. Mm. And you can savor in the past by remembering positive things. But yeah, it's, I love it because it does. It brings out things that you didn't expect. You could go through your whole work career, if you're a manager, and not know the great strengths and values of your staff because you just did things in the traditional way. There is new and emerging research on feed forward and how much it does to improve performance. So that is maybe, if we have show notes, we could even put some links to some different research papers for people who are interested in that. Because yeah, feed forward is one of my new favorite things too.
So let me go off on a little bit of a tangent here and play the devil's advocate. When I've talked about this concept to people, much of the time I hear, that's terrific, how do I do it? And sometimes, as I'm sure you've heard, I hear, that's wishy-washy, and there's no way that works, and we have to focus on what people are bad at so we can fix it, or we have to focus on mistakes or else they'll never get better. You talked a little bit about the evidence. You talked a little bit about some emerging understanding of how this actually improves performance. So if somebody's thinking, like, this is kind of wishy-washy, silly, it's nice to be positive, but it doesn't help anything, what's the response to that?
That can be a common feeling when you get the kind of Pollyanna, just think good thoughts and everything will turn out great. And we know that's not the case. But there is really solid research to show that small interventions change the way you think, which changes the way you perceive the world. And that's really what we're talking about here. It's looking at things in a different way. There is a great study that shows this. They got a bunch of undergrad students are the people who always get research done on them. And they, before they brought them into this experiment, they tested them, whether they had a negative or a positive attributional style. Were they more positive in their outlook on life, or were they more negative in their outlook on life? And then they came in and they gave them all a newspaper to read and told them when they saw the word death in the paper, they were to count it. And once they found it 20 times, they were to tell their research assistant and then they could leave. In about 5 minutes, about half the people got up and left. And then it took quite a while for the rest of them to get up and leave. Those people who left in the 5 minutes saw on the second page of the newspaper highlighted, when you read this, go to the researcher and you'll receive $100. The people who noticed that were the people, it correlated to people who had a more positive attributional style. Hmm. And what that simply means is when you are more positive, you are able to take in more things from your environment. So it's not that positive people have more opportunities, it's that positive people notice more things, so they're able to take advantage of more opportunities. Hmm. Whereas someone who may not have that positive style. I want to be clear, we're not talking about people who are depressed. We're not talking about clinical conditions, because that is a whole other realm that needs treatment. You can't just think positively and feel better when you've got, whether it's a physical or a mental illness, that does need interventions that are more serious than this. But there's a principle that what you focus on becomes your reality. So if you're looking, if you are primed to look for good things, you will find them. And I mentioned before the research on the study where you did three good things and they found that people actually measured higher on happiness and lower on depression 6 months later. There is also a meta-analysis, which is a review of a number of studies. They looked at 49 studies on positive psychology interventions, and they found that they produced improvements in well-being and lower depression levels. So there are physical and health outcomes related to positive psychology and positive psychology interventions that are showing that people are healthier, both physically and mentally, when they employ positive psychology interventions.
And you said there's some research coming out on a relationship between these positive or strengths-based leadership and actual performance at work.
Yes, the feed forward research actually has demonstrated that. So when they conducted a feed forward interview, either in place of a traditional performance review or before a performance review, the outcomes, the people were happier, they were more motivated, they enjoyed their jobs more in the year after that.
Well, that's pretty strong evidence. Just a couple of quick things before we wrap up. One of which is you do a lot of work with ACEs and prospective ACEs, people who are trying to become accredited centers of excellence, trying to be a high-performing communication center. Is there any relationship between applying some of these positive psychology or strengths-based leadership approaches and achieving something like an accreditation?
I think there's a very strong link. One of the favorite things about my job is I get to work with people and with agencies whose goal is to be the best of the best. So there's already that focus on high performance and doing things right. But you can do that in two different ways. You can do it by identifying the gaps and what they're doing wrong, or you can do it by identifying what they're already doing well and encouraging them to move forward to do even better. With agencies who are looking to be accredited, it could be easy to focus on, we don't have our ACE levels at the right spot. You know, you need to stop making these mistakes. Or you could focus on, look at all these amazing things we're doing. That call, you did all of these things well. What I would like you to consider in the future is when you're not clear on a chief complaint, ask more clarifying questions. That will get you where you need to go, and you will have a correct chief complaint. So it's a subtle switch, but we all know that the emergency dispatchers are the people who really make ACE possible. Them answering that phone every single day and doing a great job is what brings an agency to the ability to be accredited. Because if you don't have the performance levels, you can't meet that measure. So with accreditation, I think all of these positive psychology principles could be put in play. Some of the ACEs on our Facebook page were posting pictures of things they were doing in their centers. And I've seen sticky notes on a wall where people write what they're grateful for in their coworkers or what they're grateful for that day. And I think if you have an environment that you're working in that is positive, these other things naturally fall into place. And again, what you focus on becomes your reality. And if you focus on having a kind and compassionate workplace where you're doing your best work every day, and that's an actual goal, you can't help but fall into the path that will lead you to it.
One last question. If a person is listening, a dispatcher, we're going to take one idea or one practice from positive psychology with them into the new year, what would it be and why?
I'm actually going to give you two.
Okay.
The first is to take the VIA survey and identify your own strengths.
And we will put a link to that on our show notes so people can take it.
And I would encourage people to, for 1 week, use their top strength in a new way. Think of a different way to apply what they already do well. And start a gratitude journal. It could either be the three good things where you write down three things every night, but do know that that doesn't work for everybody. Some people, it works well to have three things for the week and they write in it once a week. You really have to decide what works best for you. But the more that you consciously focus on and remember what's going well, the more you'll feel like your life is a happier one, and the more resilience you'll have to come in and do the job that you need to do.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to Dispatch In Depth. Remember, it really helps us if you rate and subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, or wherever you get your podcasts. Dispatch In Depth is hosted by me, Isabel Gardette. Our producer is Becca Barris. Reading Roberts is the technical director, and Scott Robinson is our executive producer.